The Republicans have consistently run on emotionally compelling language like support the troops or the war on terror, or going all the way back to Ronald Reagan, government is the problem, not the solution. And Democrats have tended to run instead on laundry lists, long lists of policies and issues. And when they've done that, they've tended to lose.
That's psychologist Drew Weston, who's been called this year's It Man for the Democratic Party. Too often, he says, Democrats strike out where it really matters. They fail to connect emotionally with voters. So Weston's written a primer of sorts, a book called The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. And his critique has hit home for Democrats. Bill Clinton called Weston to say how much he liked the book. And both the Clinton and Obama campaigns have asked Weston for advice, though he's not on the payroll of either. Weston says Democrats need to learn how to sell their core issues.
In fact, if you trot out words like universal health insurance, you're pretty well guaranteed not to get it, because universal health coverage is about as emotionally bland a term as you can get to describe what you're trying to get at. Whereas if you say something as simple as, I believe that everybody who works for a living ought to be able to take their kid to a doctor when they're sick. Well, that's the kind of emotionally evocative, values-based language that actually gets people to vote for you.
So this is about words, in a way. This is about choosing your words carefully. This is about the way we respond to political messages.
That's right. It's about words. It's about images. It's about intonation. If you think about the debate over the war in Iraq, how different things might have been if instead of going to the level of, you know, we need to have timetables for withdrawal, and under my plan, we'll have a 2-year timetable. Well, my plan has a 1-year timetable. Timetables and plans like that, again, are not the language that gets close to people's hearts. But if you instead say, listen, there's one principle that will guide me on matters of war and peace if you elect me, whether it's the Iraq War or whether it's any other war, and that is, if I wouldn't send my child, I won't send yours. Now, I don't know about you, but that not only is close to home for me as a dad, but that's actually the rule of thumb I'd like my legislator to use. If they wouldn't send their kid, then they shouldn't be sending mine.
I read in one of the articles about you that there are some other times when the way you would recommend the candidates respond, the Democrats respond, that skate a lot closer to the edge. For instance, in one of the debates between George W. Bush and Al Gore in the 2000 campaign, I believe, Mr. Bush questioned Mr. Gore's character.
I think the particular example you're describing is one of the times that he cast aspersions on Al Gore's character, describing him as a serial exaggerator and saying that, you know, he, George W. Bush, was going to bring back integrity to the Oval Office. When somebody attacks your character, if you understand anything particularly about the South, you understand that you have no choice but to respond back, not with a defensive description of, well, let me explain to you the facts of that case. That's not how you respond if you want to win people in the South. Anthropologists have described the South of the United States as having what's called a culture of honor, where the worst thing you can do to someone is to shame them about the honor of themselves or their family, and that if you do that and they don't attack back, you see them as weak and shamed. And what Al Gore allowed George Bush to do to him was the same thing that John Kerry allowed George Bush to do to him with the Swift Boat ads, which was essentially to say to Al Gore, hey, you're a liar. To say to John Kerry, you're a fake war hero. And both of them responded essentially by saying, I'm going to take the high ground. And unfortunately, when you take that high ground, you tend to lose between 10 and 15 points in the polls in the next 3 weeks.
So what should they have done?
Well, it is remarkable if you think about it that George W. Bush ran character attacks against both Al Gore and John Kerry when character wasn't exactly George W. Bush's strong suit. I mean, you know, this guy had spent much of his life with his liquor cabinet better stocked than his bookshelf. And the Democrats never talked about it. But to come back, though, to this question, say, of how should Kerry have responded when the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, who were turned out to actually share a lawyer with George Bush's campaign, if John Kerry had simply stepped on the national stage in front of the microphones from every major news organization and said, how dare you, a man who dodged the draft back in Vietnam, you're busy protecting the borders of Louisiana while I still have the shrapnel in my leg to show what I was doing for my country. How dare you attack me and say that I didn't deserve those Purple Hearts? And to do that at a time when we have boots on the ground in Afghanistan and Iraq, do you know what kind of message that sends to soldiers out there who are lying right now in beds, who are shot up or have shrapnel in their legs or have lost an arm or lost a leg, to know that someday, not just any person, but the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, could say to them, you're fake, that you don't really deserve that Purple Heart. You owe an apology to every man and woman who has ever worn the uniform of the United States. I believe if he'd said that, the election would have been over, and it would not have been over in the direction that it went.
Well, all right, enough looking back. Let's look at now. How are the current Democratic candidates doing, according to your lights?
Well, you know, there are always good and bad examples every day. I mean, if you want an example of a magnificent use of emotion in the 2008 primaries, I think you just have to look back to Obama's victory speech in South Carolina, which was phenomenally inspiring. And I think particularly when he said words like, when I look around the landscape here, I don't see a black South Carolina. I don't see a white South Carolina. I just see South Carolina. You know, that kind of language speaks worlds about where his heart is. But Hillary Clinton, for example, is someone who just doesn't have that innate gut-level ability to connect with people over the mass media. Although from what everyone I know who knows her well says is one-on-one in a room, she's lovely. But that's not what you see on television. That's not how she comes across. But she does have the advantage of the association with Bill Clinton. I remember when she was first asked a question about, you know, what role was Bill Clinton going to play in her presidency? And she said, well, I'd be crazy to sideline someone who has such respect around the world. He would be a roving ambassador to the world for me. I thought this woman is very, very smart. I mean, the reality is the associations to Bill Clinton have been a big part of what's so attractive about her as a candidate.
Isn't that, though, something that is difficult for her, especially for any woman, to talk about what her husband might do as part of the administration?
Well, you know, I think she did a great job early on in the debates in establishing her credibility by herself. One of the best moments of any of the debates, if not the best moment, was when I think it was Tim Russert asked her a question about, he quoted someone who he had spoken with on Meet the Press about torture and whether it's ever okay. And the person had basically equivocated but said something to the effect that, well, you know, under some cases it might be appropriate. And then asked her to comment on it. She said, I disagree. I don't think it ever is. And he said, well, you know, the man who said that was William Jefferson Clinton. And she paused for a second and said, well, he's not standing here right now, is he? And it was a wonderful response, to which, you know, Russert followed up one more time by saying, so you disagree with your husband on this. And then she did this kind of marvelous pivot where she said in this kind of coquettish way that made everyone in America identify with her as a woman, which is one of the most important things that she still needs to do. She said, well, we'll talk about that when I get home tonight. But it was one of those things that, you know, every married couple in the country has had those moments 1,000 times. And for once, they could identify with her. And that's really been one of the biggest problems with her campaign, is that, as with Kerry, it's been hard to identify with her.
Drew Weston is a psychologist at Emory University and the author of the book The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation.